Alrighty. Welcome, everyone. So nice to see your faces. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited that I can talk and breathe properly. As you may or may not have seen, I've had pneumonia over the last couple of weeks, and it's been a total bastard, to be totally honest with you. But I'm feeling a lot better and a lot more energetic. So yeah, thank you, Gemma. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here too. Yeah. So what's going to happen tonight is we're going to do a little bit of a "you are here" kind of map of where you're at in this program. And no matter what you've managed to open, look at, learn, whether or not you've been to any of the coaching circles, life happens, right? And this program is meant to walk alongside you in your life, not give you an additional burden or a reason to beat yourself up. So the reason that this is a year-long program is partly because moving through and healing our self-doubt takes time, but also we all have lives. And the idea is that this gives you enough time and space to absorb the material, to play with it, to experiment, to come back to it time and again, and you're supported as you go through that. So please don't buy into that belief that somehow you're behind, even though I know that is pretty tempting sometimes for a lot of us, especially if you're a little bit perfectionist maybe, or you've just got some ideas around where you should be. My own kind of philosophy around this is that there's no better place. There's no there to get to. Here's great. Here's really good. Here's where you are. So we can work with that. We can absolutely work with that. So tonight we're going to do, yeah, a little bit of where are you? What's coming? And also there's going to be time and space for just coaching, freeform coaching. Stuff that might be coming up for you around this work, what it's sparking in you, maybe some pieces that you're starting to put together about why you're responding to yourself but doubt in the ways you are. Anything that's unclear or you're uncertain of, we'll have time and space to have a look at that tonight. So yeah, good times ahead. All right. So let's get a little bit of kind of location where we are. And actually, before we do that, what we might do is kind of check in and get here. My tendency is always to want to get to the material. And I'm learning that actually it's better to be in my nervous system first. Be with my nervous system first. So let's get there together. Let's kind of do this thing we call in the talking professions, we call it co-regulating. You might have heard of that. And it's the idea that we can get to a place of presence and grounded calmness when we are around people who are present and grounded and calm. We literally have these mirror neurons that reflect off other people. So you may notice there are people in your life that you feel really kind of safe with and really calm and comfortable around. They're the folks that you're co-regulating with. Yeah. And we can do that ourselves. So just feel your feet on the floor, or if they're tucked under your bum, that's totally fine. But just be aware of the location of your feet right now and your thighs. Notice where you're sitting, that the chair is supporting you. You may want to start to just gently close your eyes if that feels comfortable to you. Just notice the weight of your body and your chair. Notice your arms, let them just hang loosely. Just feel your body kind of relax a little. Let your shoulders drop, let your belly soften. And go up into your jaw. Just let your jaw relax. You can spend a lot of time smiling. Your neck just soften. And just become aware of your breath. Notice your inhale. See if you can imagine it going right into your belly. Just notice any emotions or thoughts that might be with you right now. Whatever kind of day you're having will be with you. Just notice that nothing needs to change right now. You can just be with yourself. You might like to say to yourself, you know, I've got me right now. I've got me. When you're ready, just give your feet a little wiggle. Feel yourself coming back to the room. Just open your eyes when you feel ready to. Nice to get here, right? And this is a really active practice of self-acceptance, which we're going to get to as we move through self-belief school. But just self-acceptance is just being with who you are right now, all of yourself right now, whatever you're thinking and feeling, whatever parts of you are kind of in charge right now, you just get to be there with yourself. Nothing needs to change. So yeah, bravo. Bit of self-acceptance, just a smidge. Okay. let me get some locations going. Okay. So this here is this diagram of the kind of model of self-belief. And we've been spending quite a bit of time looking at this stuff here, the protector, which is all about self-doubt. And that's going to help us kind of understand more about our self-doubt, right? Understand why it's here and what it's doing and why we need to take care of it. So this part one of our program is kind of where we're at right now. This is about four modules. Understanding self-doubt, making peace with your protector, the root causes of self-doubt, and then changing your self-doubt story. So we're spending four modules out of 10 really getting to grips with self-doubt. And the reason for that is because that helps us to truly understand what's actually going on. Most of us, if you're anything like me, go, oh, that feels awful. I don't like that I'm holding myself back, that I'm judging myself, I'm comparing to other people, I'm procrastinating, I'm being a perfectionist. All of those things that we do when self-doubt hits us, we just want to avoid that and get on with it, get out of it. One of the questions that people ask me all the time is, yeah, but how do I just overcome self-doubt? How do I get rid of it? And I don't know if it's bad news or good news. I think it's good news. The good news is we don't actually get over our self-doubt. What we do is walk with it. And we walk with it in a way that means it's not in charge. Okay. And as we go through these first few modules, that's what we're kind of learning to do, is learning to see where our self-doubt comes from. Right. So we're here at the moment. We're just starting module 3. And this is really starting to look at just the root causes of self-doubt, where your self-doubt came from. Right. So I just want to recap on kind of what we've been looking at. So you might have seen the emotion cycle as something that we talked about at the very start, before we really even started the program, around how you can just notice body sensations that come up with an emotion. And that helps you to acknowledge and name it and get interested in what this emotion is teaching you, so you can watch it pass. That this, and this is a like universal practice for this work, to be able to just be with your emotions without responding or reacting or projecting them, but just to be with them. I think this is something that took me the best part of 40 years to learn, that I even really had emotions and I could be with them. But what I found is that in this work, the ability to just be in that place of, oh, I'm feeling something. Can I be with it? Can I get interested in what it actually is and why it's here? This is one of those fundamental kind of practices that really help you to get curious about what's going on as you start to learn more and more about your own self-doubt. So as we started module one, we were looking at the self-doubt loop, right? This is how self-doubt shows up in the same way all the time, right? We start to think about doing something, an alarm goes off, something inside of us says, don't do that, you might hurt yourself, right? Don't do that thing, don't say that thing to that person, don't do that thing that you want to do maybe, but don't take a risk. That's dangerous. And then for us to know that alarm has gone off, our bodies are sending us a ton of discomfort. And so we have these difficult sensations and emotions and thoughts. You might be like me, a bit visual. So you get these kind of images in your mind of a worst case scenario. You know, if I send that email, that person will never speak to me again, kind of thing. You also may have memories of when things have come up in the past that are related to the kind of thing you're contemplating, right? Whatever's triggered that alarm, it may send you back to, oh, remember you learned growing up that conflict is always bad. It should always be avoided. So don't ever send an email that might lead to that. And so we end up in these resistant behaviors where we're trying to get out of that discomfort. And the resistances are the six P's, right? The passive behavior, so we just kind of stand and watch, or the perfectionism, we work really hard to make sure that it's absolutely good enough. We procrastinate. We get into people pleasing. We get into, so we're taking care of everybody else except ourselves. We get into, oh, my memory is going so bad. Those are the behaviors that are us trying to avoid that discomfort. And what happens is that those behaviors form a pattern, and we say to ourselves, to other people, oh, I don't do conflict. I'm not a person who does conflict. I'm a procrastinator. As if it's a blood type, as if it can't be changed, right? And so what we're trying to do in this program is show you that you can get out of this loop as soon as you contemplate a task, that you notice, oh, might set the alarm off. Right, what am I going to do differently? Before I go around that loop, how can I support myself to recognize that alarm's going off for a bloody good reason? It's trying to protect me from some risk that I've developed over experience and time, through relationships, through things that have happened. I find this thing risky, whether it's the risk of judgment or rejection or disappointment or failure, right? Whatever we find risky, we're going to try and avoid. And so when we know that we're doing something super brave that is going to trigger those risks, when we get to a place of feeling resourced, it's like, oh, okay, how am I going to take care of myself in this moment so I don't end up around the loop? And in order to do that, we kind of need to know what caused the risk, right? So we can say, oh, that is my 14-year-old self who was bullied, who doesn't want to experience anything like that kind of rejection again. So she's here going, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. How can I take care of her? How can I offer her some compassion? What can I say to myself as a healthy adult that can support me in this moment? Right. So that's where we're going. That's where we're going to get to. And then what happens is you find that those patterns, you're suddenly like, haven't done that thing where I procrastinate my whole bloody day away for a while. Maybe I'm not a procrastinator, right? I sent an email with a really clear boundary in it, and I was really okay with that. Maybe I'm someone who can actually risk a tiny bit of conflict, right? I took care of myself and my needs in this moment. Yeah, I'm not a people pleaser, right? You start to give yourself some evidence that it's possible for you to do completely different things to how you may identify yourself right now. Yeah. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah. And then you find that, oh, this thing that I thought was my identity, of that was a fixed state of who I am, that was just my pattern of trying to take care of myself. That was how I was trying to create safety. I was procrastinating because that was way safer than doing the scary thing. When I feel resourced and I can do the scary thing, I don't need to procrastinate anymore. I can just take care of myself. I'm a grown-ass woman. I can take care of myself. Yeah. So I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing that our self-doubt doesn't go away, because it gives us these endless, endless opportunities to grow, to know ourselves, to take care of ourselves, to treat ourselves with the love and care and self-respect and worth that we are absolutely is our birthright, I think. So for me, self-doubt is the doorway into all of that. It's the opportunity to see all of that. And for some of you, you might be going, the hell is she on? I promise you it's not like life coach tea or anything. They don't give us that. But there is this process, I think, that you at some point, most people go, oh, hang on, I don't actually want my self-doubt to go away, because that's showing me where I'm growing, where I'm expanding. This is okay. I can be with this. And then it's like your resistance just falls away. The cool part is we have no freaking idea who we can be without these resistant patterns. No idea. If you told me 10 years ago I'd be doing this kind of work, I'd be like, what are you on? Yeah. And it's just one step at a time. But I want to give you that picture of that's where we're going, right? I think it's worth getting excited about. So that was kind of module one, right? And then we looked at these protectors. Did you all kind of get a grip on what your favorite protector is, what one shows up for you? So there's the critic, the martyr, the scapegoat, and the bystander. Sorry, that image isn't very clear. Do you want to all share in the chat what one you kind of went, oh yeah, I'm definitely this? The ones that show up for me are the critic and the scapegoat. So most of us have kind of one or two that show up. But do feel free to share what came up for you. And it's quite fun as well. To get to a place where, as we'll get to know each other, I sort of get to know your protectors as well, right? So it's kind of fun to see, oh, I can see your protector showing up. Yeah. Yeah. Love this. Yeah, Debbie, the martyr and the bystander. Yeah, that's a groovy combo, right? Because it's basically this sense of I have to take care of everybody else first, and I need to do that in a way that's right. So I'm waiting all the time to do my own thing, and I'm prioritizing other people. But that might be something that resonates for you. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Helen, the martyr and the bystander. Yeah, it's same one, right? Yeah, taking care of other people first and then waiting until it's right before you do anything for yourself. Yeah. Sound familiar? Yeah. Yeah, and recognizing all of them. Oh my goodness, we've got 3 for 3. Jimmy, you're the same. That is fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. And Erin, you're the critic and the bystander as well. Yep, and it's quite interesting, isn't it, that most of us kind of go, oh, I'm all of them. And what I find is usually they can be context specific, right? So you might find that, like for me, I know in my work life, my critic can come up. It's like, keep going, keep proving yourself. It's not really a perfectionist thing for me as much as it is make sure you know everything, like make sure you're on top of everything. Yeah, so that only really comes up in work. Other places in my life, I'm like, I'm not going to try that hard. I'm not overworking there. Yeah, I'm like, I'm on the big rest. Yeah, yeah. That is really interesting, Erin. Yeah, just the critic is a major one. And other stuff comes up too. The bystander and the critic are quite an interesting combo. And there's usually a kind of relationship there around doing the right thing or waiting for the right thing. That might sound familiar to you. Yeah, I'm seeing you nod. So I'm thinking that we might be onto something there. Yeah. What I found is that this model of just expanding out this idea that we all have an inner critic, it just really helps us to see, oh, there's more to it than that. We're a bit more interesting than that. And it can also help in terms of how to just sort of, again, go into that place of like, what can I do instead? What can I try instead, right? So just using those experiments to just play with what's an alternative? I don't have to do this. It's a habit, it's a pattern, but it's not my blood type. I have options. I'm endlessly in choice. And what I would say is for anyone who is bravely playing with their protector, what can happen is that we start to go, oh, this feels freaking horrible. I don't want to do this. Like we have all sorts of stories, right? Especially if you've got a strong martyr around the story that tends to come up is it's not okay for me to put myself first. Somehow that's selfish. What will people think if I put myself first, right? And all I would say is that just recognize that's part of the resistance from your protector, right? That's how sophisticated it is. It's going to tell you, what will people think? That's the thing you should be worried about, right? Because the whole point of being in that place or using that pattern of the martyr is to stay needed, to stay loved, and to feel that sense of belonging. So we don't want to do anything that can risk that. So if you are just playing with that martyr protector and you know, allowing yourself to maybe set a boundary in a relationship or to change one thing about a relationship, to create some time and space just for you and look at, you know, what happens. What comes up when I do that? Do I start to worry about being selfish? What's that about, right? So you're just starting to build more information around where this particular pattern comes from. Because I promise you, it comes from a really, you know, a place that makes total sense. Right? It's no accident that we have these particular patterns, yeah? So that was module 2. It was all about how is this showing up? And then what we're moving into in module three is where it all comes from, right? Like why we have those particular patterns. So there's two kind of main tools in module three. One is your life map, right? Where you actually start to look at what has made you up. What are the experiences, the relationships, the contexts, the culture, the time, the age that you are, and what's going on in your family and in your world at different times in your life that has led you to feel that some things are risks and to feel hesitant to take those risks? What's led you to form this pattern of protection? Excuse me. So what are the protectors that feel most familiar to you? Why are they there? How does that make sense? Right? So that's what this module that we're in now is all about. And I can't tell you how many times you'll come back to your life map and just add stuff in. I'm still doing it. I did my first life map about 12 years ago, and I'm still doing it. I did it in a really weird context. I learned to do this. And it was a management strategy paper at university, and they wanted us to do it was the weirdest thing. I was like, oh, I love this, what's this about? And then I came across it again in my graduate studies, but yeah, it's so fascinating to just look at what things have informed who I am. I don't think it's an accident that we turn out the way we are, right? And that there are always these events that happen that are sad and difficult, happy and joyous. That's what being alive is all about, right? And often what you'll find if you joined all your dots up is that those sad and difficult experiences are often followed by a trajectory that goes up, which I think is incredibly hopeful, which you start to see, oh, actually, Things always pass, right? So if you're in the process of doing your life map, if you've started or you maybe are hesitating, what I would say is just whack down the most important events and just come back to it as and when you have realizations or it just feels like something you want to do. It can be incredibly cathartic. And a lot of people that I've gone through this process with have said, wow, it's just like I've been through a lot. I didn't realize we never do this where we look at our lives on the page, on one page, and think about, wow, what is that about? Right? So it's a really lovely process to do for yourself and to kind of see, oh man, I've got a lot in my life. I've got a rich life. And it can help you to start putting those kind of jigsaw pieces together. Where did this come from and why is it here? And we're also going to look at the protective beliefs that get formed as part of that process. And I won't go into that now because that will be something that we'll talk about in coaching circles next week when you look at module three. But what I'm hoping is that you're starting to kind of put these things together. Oh, this is why I respond in this way. This is where that comes from. It makes sense to me. And the whole kind of approach to this is just awareness, understanding, compassion. It means that when we come to the next module, module four, where we start to change your self-doubt story, it's like, I'm kind of ready for this. This no longer feels too risky to actually change this. I can kind of see where it comes from. I don't think it's serving me anymore. So I'm pretty ready for it to change. Yeah. So all to say, wherever you're at in the process of kind of digesting this material, you know, just be really kind to yourself. And, you know, there's no rush. There's no screaming rush. Not going anywhere. You can come back to me in 6 months' time and go, okay, that thing in module two, I want to talk about that. And there is always going to be space for that. Yeah, absolutely. Crikey, I'm coming back to that. 10 years into this work. So yeah, there's no place where we get to be done. Okay, so that's the kind of, I just wanted to take some of our time up today to sort of talk about that. But I also want to throw open to you, what are you noticing about your own response to self-doubt? What is this kicking off for you? What's being stirred up? Are there things that are happening in your life that you think, actually, I'd really appreciate someone walking me through this a little bit more? Or anything that you've got questions around, I want to throw it open to you. And of course, everyone then goes, oh God, now I've got to speak. Please know you're totally safe. I'll take very good care of you. You don't have to say anything that you don't want to. It's all good. It's all good. But yeah, I do want to support you. So if you have got stuff that's stirring around, then stick your hand up. Gemma, of course. Can you just unmute yourself, love? Oh, there you are. Amazing.
I think for me, like the most sort of revelatory bit that I've come to so far when kind of working out about my protectors, and apologies because Erin has heard this in our coaching circles, that for me it's a massive fear of success. Like, success does not belong to me. Success is not in my vocabulary. I'm not entitled to it. And I think that all of my key protectors, the martyr and the bystander, are all about that. And that's kind of what I want to tease out. And I hadn't really articulated that. I recognized, although I didn't have the vocabulary exactly, but I recognized the martyr in me, definitely. I recognize some of the bystander passivity, passive behaviors, but I hadn't sort of pieced it together that really, yeah, like success is something that happens to other people and I really want it, but I don't know how other people do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm scared of it. So that was a big and interesting thing for me.
That's fascinating. It's so cool. It's so cool just to go, oh, that's the thing, right? Like, how great to just have that self-awareness. Oh, there is this thing called success that I've made it to mean something, and it means I can't have it. I'm curious to know, Gemma, if you know why success feels risky to you.
That's a good question. I think not yet. I think I'm still finding my way into that. Yeah, so sort of there's, I think I was raised with a lot of love, but a lot of caution. Be careful, be careful, be careful. So I think that's part of it. But I haven't kind of, it still feels a bit foggy to me. And I'm really thinking that this work will really help me to unfog it.
And I think it's really helpful to go into like life map stuff to carry that with you, right? Like, and what did I learn about success from this relationship, from this situation? So you may even think, okay, what was the family motto about success? How did we treat people that were successful in my family? Right. So my parents, I just relate so much. My parents are from the northeast of England, even though they immigrated to New Zealand. So they're all from Durham County, very, very working class, quite poverty stricken. I'm the granddaughter of two coal miners, right? So success in my family was basically a no-no, because then you would have to leave your whole community. You wouldn't fit in anymore. So it was a, it was kind of like, oh, they got too big for the boots and they were ostracized. It's dangerous to be successful. So it, all to say, oh, that's really helped me to figure out why that, that feels risky to me. So those kinds of questions, you know, what did I learn about success from my family of origin, from the teachers I had or the adults that influenced me as I was growing up, from workplaces I was in, you know, who do I look to that seems successful in your field of work or in your field of contribution? And what do you feel about those people? What do you imagine they must go through? And you start to think a bit more deeply about what are you making it mean that success is risky? Does that kind of help you just to kind of carry that with you?
Yeah.
You might even be having some things come up for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd also say, like, don't forget the wider cultural narratives, right? So one of the reasons to kind of put your life map on the page is to see your life in context, but also know that it's happening within a context of being a woman, of being at the age you are, of what is the kind of cultural narratives that are around for successful women, which is basically we don't like them, right? The whole culture is not geared up for successful women. They are incredibly threatening because they aren't dependent on anybody for anything. So even our own interpretations of what might have happened to us personally will also be filtered through those wider cultural stories. So, and this is why, yeah, it really freaking does matter what's in the Daily Mail, right? Even if we don't read it, we know what it's in, what's in there, right? So that infuses our understanding of what we're allowed to do. So all of this is going to help you make sense of that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. How does that, excuse me, how does that all land for you, Gemma?
Yeah, it really, it all feels really true and really, like I recognize it all. So I think because it feels so true and so right, like I've got to follow that. I've got to follow that and work out what's at the root of it. But yeah, it feels very where I need to go, and you know, to look into. So.
Beautiful. It's a breadcrumb trail. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Gemma. That's fantastic. I'm glad that helped. Anyone else have a question or a thing that's coming up for them that you want to share? I promise you, I will never be surprised. Alan, hi.
Hi. I don't know if I'm like ready to share too much yet. I'm on that breadcrumb trail myself. Just trying to, kind of join the dots a little bit and make sense of things that are kind of occurring as I go through. But I feel, I don't know if anyone else feels it, but I feel really quite scared to do my life map. I feel really nervous about it. I feel really like I was watching the videos today, and then I went on my dog walk afterwards, and I was just kind of almost allowing it to percolate with me, to just sort of think about, because I have the worst memory as well. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to start this life map and I'm not going to be able to remember anything from my childhood at all. And but then I was walking, and I sort of started thinking about a few things. And it's interesting, isn't it, when you think of one thing and then that kind of sparks something else off. But I am nervous about it. Just because I know what it's going to prompt. So, and I think that's obviously, like, you know, it's completely natural and it's completely normal. And it's the procrastination. And I will, and I'll get to it, and I'll just start with those kind of like main things. But
yeah,
it's kind of like you're just... It's really interesting, isn't it? Because you kind of know, like, deep down why, you know, the self-doubt is there. But sometimes it's just really hard to just go, okay, we're gonna now unpick this and delve into this. And I think that's just where a bit of the fear is coming in.
So I really hear that. And all I would say is, you don't have to delve anywhere. Right? This actually isn't like an excavation project. And there's no points for that. Right? It's much more about acknowledging.
Yeah.
Right? So that might help you just to kind of go, this has already happened. I don't have to understand any of the connections yet. That's going to come as we go through this program. But I'm just going to acknowledge what I know. And it's the way I always encourage people, and I've worked with a lot of people who have survived trauma, who have used this process to acknowledge that for themselves, is that sometimes it can help to see yourself as a sort of reporter. You know, and it's like, just the facts. I'm just going to put down the facts. And for folks who have had a lot of trauma in their lives, that can feel really empowering. Look what I survived. Look where I'm at now.
Yeah.
That happened. That happened. That has made me who I am. And we don't have to go into it. We're not reliving it. We're not doing anything like that. We're just acknowledging. And I hear you. Like, most of us know where our stuff comes from, or we have an inkling, and we don't actually have to go into it to heal up what we make it mean now, right? So we don't have to go and relive it and make sense of it and do all of those things to be able to change how we want to make, what meaning we want to give that in our lives now. So all to say, really take care of yourself as you're doing this, right? Just the facts is great, you know, and even if you start with like the kind of logistical facts, where you went to school, you know, where you went to work, get that on the page first. And then it's like, okay, cool. When I feel a little bit more into it, I'll come back and add in some more details. But that's going to be enough just to get you started.
Yeah. I think I'm also reflecting on, and this is kind of like a bit of a thing for me as well. So recognizing my protectors. So there's one part of me that holds back and waits and doesn't act, because I'm almost, and I, again, this is what we'll be working on, but I'm almost afraid of what I could achieve. And I think it's almost like what Gemma said. It's like that fear of how good I could be.
Yes.
And And so when I avoid that, like I really avoid it. So I just stand back and I, you know, I have put myself forward in certain things, but you know, it's almost like you don't want to confront things because you kind of, I don't know, like there's almost, I know the potential, but I'm a bit scared of it.
Yeah.
And so I completely understand what my protector is doing. And I guess with the martyr as well, like I need to be needed. Mm. I need to be needed. And what happens if I start saying no to the people that need me the most because I need to look after myself? And then that means that I'm, do I have a purpose if I'm not needed? Mm. You know, and all of this stuff is kind of like,
I
appreciate I'm just noticing it and I'm acknowledging it, and I don't need to find the answers, even though I always need to have an answer and I always need to fix it, you know. It's so it's so interesting to be really noticing this stuff and allowing that's enough for now.
Exactly. And one tweak I would offer you, and just do this if it feels good to you, is to start getting into the habit of using what I call clean language, or what's known as clean language.
So, yes, I've heard you say that before, yeah. Right?
So this idea of I need to be needed, instead of that, try saying something like, there's a part of me that needs to be needed.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of, I have to know everything and I have to fix everything, there are parts of me that really feel safe when I know more. And there's a part of me that feels good when I'm fixing things. Because I just want you to get into the habit of hearing yourself understand that your self-doubt isn't all of you, that your need to be needed isn't all of you. Like, this is not your whole identity. Like, and I think some of the feedback I get when people come to the end of this core curriculum is, holy crap, I'm so complex and I really do have multiple dudes in me, right? I have multitudes, right? That actually that is really embodied, because we see that we've got all these different parts. And so the other part of this is, oh, there's a part of me that is kind of fizzing a little bit with potential. There's another part of me that's a little bit afraid of that potential. Right? So you start to just see that it's something that is a part of you. That means that there is also you, the big you, that can hold it. Right? And that then becomes the kind of like the visual metaphor that we have in the diagram of the healthy adult self is holding the protector, right? That protectors are smaller than the healthy adult self. So you start to see that our healthiest adult self, our most resourced and regulated and reflective self is completely able to hold all these parts, right? I wonder if that helps you, Helen, just to kind of see these aspects as parts of you.
Yeah, I definitely find that I can be overwhelmed with all of the things.
Yeah.
And having the kind of desire to put it all in order and create meaning.
Yeah.
I recognize that in myself. So yes, it does help.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the thing is, right, putting it all in order and tidying it all away, I mean, that's just how we want to control things. I know, yeah. I feel you, because that's totally what I want to do all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, like just tie it up in a nice bow. And yeah,
put it in a drawer. Don't
go and have a nap.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So yeah, that languaging of, oh, you know, there's a part of me that's feeling this or wants this or experiences this, it can just really help to add some perspective into this work, just as you're figuring all the pieces out. Yeah. And I promise, once we kind of hit the halfway mark and we're three modules in, right, there is a kind of like tipping point, a natural tipping point where you're like, oh, I think I freaking understand this a bit better, right? I'm putting these pieces together and, oh, I'm doing stuff differently. I notice my responses are a bit different, yeah? And it's all just playing with this stuff, giving it a crack, talking it through, taking stuff to the coaches, to me, asking for support, whatever you need. It's all good, all good. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. Does anyone else have any questions? Is there anything else anyone wants to ask you? Erin, are you all good? You're all right? Yeah. Anything you have? Yeah, Erin, feel free.
I know I'm having a hard time summarizing everything. So if this is too vague, let me know. And hopefully it's not too big of a question. But I think the root cause of my self-doubt probably came from being bullied a lot as a kid. And then my parents were not very accepting of a lot of my emotions. Like, I wasn't allowed to be sad or anything but except happy. So I think I just disconnected so much from myself that I'm having a really hard time even feeling in tune with my body, feeling in tune with my nervous system, my emotions. Like, all of that is just a blank. Yeah. So I don't know if you have any like tips or anything to share and like how to get back into that.
Well, you know, what comes up for me as I hear you say that, Erin, is, oh, I have so much compassion for little Erin, who just wanted to feel her feelings and didn't know why it wasn't okay to just be human and have a range of feelings. And, you know, so many of us grew up in homes like that where our parents didn't really know how to feel their own feelings, let alone be with ours. So all to say, you know, I just have so much compassion for your little self. And what strikes me is what a sophisticated response for a little person to have, to go, oh, this isn't safe. So what I'll do is actually cut myself off from those emotions. And then I get to preserve the relationship with my family. Like, what a freaking incredible idea, like with no guidance or, I imagine, no one said this was the best way to do it, right? You just figured that out yourself as a little person. And that is a really tricky thing to do. So a couple of things I would offer is, first of all, if you've spent quite a lot of your life not feeling feelings, then learning how to feel them and giving yourself permission to feel them might take a little time, might take some practice, right? I so relate to what you're describing. And I think it took me quite a while to figure out that I actually had feelings from the neck down. Like, it was a real revelation. Now I just feel everything and it's freaking inconvenient to be free. But I think what I would offer is that you are experiencing emotions, even if you're not feeling that connected to them. And so that can be a doorway in, right? Is to just pause when you notice that. You might notice a body sensation, you might feel a little flushed or a little racing heart, or just it'll be like, something's happening, I'm feeling something. To find a way that you can, you know, going to the loo is the perfect out for every situation like this, where you just kind of go, okay, what actually am I feeling? What do I notice in my body? Because what you want to do is make it safe for yourself to just open those channels up. And I had a therapist who said to me, you may feel yourself like almost going, oh, I felt one, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I felt a 2 and I panicked and shoved it back down again. That's really, really normal too, right? What we can often imagine is that as soon as I allow myself to feel emotions, I'm just going to be a shit show, right? Everything's going to come out and I won't be able to control it. And actually that doesn't really happen like that. So any way that you can give yourself a safe experience of just noticing what's happening, use the emotion cycle to practice. And you may even want to do this like as a kind of morning and evening practice. Like, what did I notice I felt today? If I go back into that memory, how do I remember feeling? So you can kind of do this when you're nice and cozy in your own bed and you feel safe. And just practicing naming emotions can just really open up that vocabulary for yourself. So that would be my first thing, is making it safe for you to feel things. And the second thing is any kind of embodiment practice, like yoga, running, if you love running or swimming or anything where you're moving your body, dancing in your kitchen, anything like that, Tai Chi, Qigong, anything that opens your body up to the present moment is probably going to help as well. So I know that the kind of mainstream idea is that our body holds our score of emotions and kind of looks after it. It kind of doesn't quite work like that. Like, it's not like there is a trunk somewhere in our bodies that everything is stored in. But what can happen is that movement and being embodied can raise our sensations, and that's our doorway into emotions. So again, it's not like you're going to start dancing in your kitchen and it's all going to come out, right? But you may start to feel more, and that's a really beautiful, rich life to have. And it's safe for you now to feel that. Probably wasn't safe when you were growing up, but it is safe for you now. So anything you can do to just offer yourself that safe compassion is really going to help. How does that all sort of land for you, Erin? It wasn't too big a question, it turned out.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it makes more sense because I've been dealing with a chronic illness. So my movement has been super restricted the last 3 years or so.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably contributing to, like, when people say embody, you know, your mode, I'm like, I feel dead inside most of the time, or it's just anxiety. It's one or the other, where my heart is always racing. So it's very hard to like get underneath that.
Yeah. So any kind of stillness practice can really help. Yeah. And it might feel like, this is wrong. It doesn't feel right. It's not what I imagine. It's not what I see on the telly, right? But all I would say is, I'm just unpracticed at this. I'm not very practiced at feeling things. And, you know, from what you've described, your body's trying to get your attention. Yeah, it's saying, hey, pay some love over here. We need you to notice. So it's wanting, it feels like it's wanting to share that with you. So yeah.
Thank you.
You're so, so welcome, Erin. Great question. I know that will resonate with lots of people. Yeah. To anyone who's watching the recording, you know, anything you can do to get good at feeling your feelings, what you'll notice is, as we go through, is that every risk is associated with a feeling that we don't think we can hold. Right? If I'm holding myself back because what if I feel disappointed? I cannot be with disappointment. So anything you can do to expand your emotional vocabulary, your ability to just be with your feelings. It still shocks me now, but I have never died from feeling a feeling, even the ones I thought I would actually kill me. And I think sometimes we think it will end us. Something will break and we won't be able to contain it. But the thing about our bodies is that they're so intelligent. They're always trying to bring us back to this place called homeostasis, which is when we're calm and present and grounded. Right, so our healthy adult self, our bodies are built in trying to get us there. And all of the the big emotions will dissipate, they will lessen within 90 seconds. Right? So if anyone's interested in this, what I would say is there's a fantastic YouTube documentary thingo, and it's by Jill Bolte Taylor. You might recognize her name. She is a neuroscientist who had a stroke and knew that she was having a stroke when it happened because she studied stroke victims, or stroke survivors. And she lost the power of speech. And so she couldn't really talk or verbalize her emotions, but she got really freaking good at feeling them and noticing them. And this helped her to recognize every emotion will dissipate, will pass within about 90 seconds. It changes, right? So we might go from despair to something like deep unhappiness. It's still coming down, right? It's coming down within 90 seconds because our bodies want us to thrive. It's the body's job is to keep us alive. And so it's always trying to bring us back to that grounded present place where we're nice and calm and everything's good. So you have this amazing vessel that is on your side trying to help. Yeah. What a great place to kind of draw to a close. Yeah. Take care of your bodies, feel your feelings. It'll all be good. thanks so much for being here. Loves, I personally, these small groups, these intimate groups, just my absolute jam. So I'm super glad we all got to chat. And thank you for bringing such juicy, juicy questions and shares. It's really, really fun. So yeah, take care of yourselves. We're going to have a little break over the Easter period. So you'll probably find that it's another week before we release the next module. But that gives you plenty of time to just eat some hot cross buns and chocolate bunnies and chill out. and we'll be back in a few weeks. So coaching circles happen next week, and then we'll take a little break. Okay. All right, my loves, have an awesome rest of your day, and I'll see you soon. Okay. Bye, everyone. Bye.